Okay. So the remainder of today, we're going to look at two examples of non-cellular wireless technologies. Two of the three we'll look at eventually. We're going to look at wireless LAN, specifically the 802.11 standard, and Bluetooth standard. Okay. At some point in the future, we'll also look at the WiMAX standard. Now, these are interesting, well, in the sense that, well, number one, they're very common. Probably the most common implementation of local area networks these days would be wireless because it's so easy. And also, the second point of interest is that, again, unlike the cellular systems, these arise from the data networks community, so the TCP/IP community. And so the approach to resource allocation, et cetera, is going to be different. Again, we'll see that there are some points of convergence today. So it's interesting, again, to look at sort of how specifically data and IP traffic is transported over wireless networks. Okay. So, again, there's numerous references. William Stallings, which is, again, probably the main reference for this course, talks about 802.11 and Bluetooth in a fairly reasonable, succinct fashion. Okay, so what are the benefits of a wireless system? Well, primarily the lack of wires. And so this means that you can move your devices. Now again, these are local area networks, so typically there'll be an access point somewhere, and that access point has a range, and you can't move beyond that range, but you can pick up your computer and move it from one end of the room to another. Okay. Less infrastructure is required. Again, those wires can be very difficult to lay. Now you just need to sort of set up an access point somewhere. Again, this is quite mobile. You can move it around wherever you need it. It can be quite cost efficient. It's expandable, and it also allows the possibility of devices talking directly to each other. What are the disadvantages then? Well, it's hard to get the same speeds out of wireless systems or radio systems in general, although again, we'll see how that's, as we go through the course, we'll see that that's changing to some extent. There are more security issues. So if you have a wired system, then, you're as secure as your wires are anyway. If you have a radio system, then basically anybody can pick up that radio signal, and also anybody can attempt to disrupt that radio signal. Okay, and there are issues with the range of the systems. Okay, okay. Okay. So the 802.11 family of wireless LANs is probably the most successful wireless networking technology. Again, so we're talking about the transport of IP. It operates, sort of as an overview, operates in the in a license exempt band. So there, unlike the cellular systems, there's no issues of there's no regulatory issues regarding the use of the spectrum. It's standardized by IEEE. And again, it's part of that IEEE 802 local area and medium area network family. Okay. The Wi-Fi Alliance is the industry body which ensures standards compliance. So IEEE will set the standards, then if you go to build according to the standards, the Wi-Fi Alliance then will certify that you are indeed in compliance with the standards. And so again, with the goal of promoting interoperability and system compatibility. Okay. So, again, just in terms of flexibility, the 802.11 is working in this ISM band, which is ISM stands for Industrial, Scientific, and Medical, and it's a set of bands, frequency bands, for which no license is necessary. And again, that's contrasted with the operation of the cellular networks, which are all in regulated bands, require licensing, the licensing of which would happen, it's pretty much done on a country-by-country basis. So in Ireland, there would be ComRed, the US would be FCC, Ofcom, I believe it's the UK standard, the body, AGC. Okay. So exactly what this band is differs from country to country. They're more or less the same, but it's certain portions may be reserved in different countries. There are limits on the maximum transmit power, again, for the purposes of being sort of good neighbors. If you're using this band and you're sharing it with everybody else, then you certainly, you want to sort of, again, try and limit the amount of interference that there would be between one user and another. Okay, so there's a huge number of different wireless systems that will operate in this band, and indeed microwave ovens also transmit this interference in these bands. Okay. Now, there's two ways in which it's sort of envisaged this the wireless LANs could work, and sort of the most common option is that you'll have a number of users who are communicating to an access point, which will then, allow access to the internet. Okay, and this is referred to as an infrastructure configuration. Potentially, since, again, anybody can pick up these signals, it's possible that users can communicate directly with each other, and this would be referred to as an ad hoc configuration. Again, the infrastructure mode is the most common. In terms of terminology, the basic configuration is referred to as a basic service set. And this is defined as a group of stations that can communicate with each other or again with the access point. And so the number of stations is obviously going to be restricted by the propagation characteristics of the wireless medium. In other words, you have to be within range in order to communicate. Okay. And then again, we distinguish between stations and access points, where an access point is just a station that's has access to an external, typically wired network. Okay. Now again, the range of the basic services set is limited by the capabilities of radio transmission, and so an extended service set allows for the creation of an arbitrarily large network by allowing the connection of a number of basic services sets. Okay. And this is not unlike, you can do this with wired LANs as well. If your LAN is connected, for instance, by a cable, a coax cable as the backbone, then there's only a certain length that can be as well. And so then you can connect up a number of these using a bridge or a router. And so you can do a similar thing here. You connect up a number of sort of basic services sets using some sort of backbone network. Okay. And in this case, all the access points are going to advertise the same ID for the network association. Okay. And so then a backbone network can be used to transport packets between different access points, and and so the access points can be used as bridges to connect different portions of the network. And since you have a single network ID, we can have mobility management between the different BSSs. So if you move from the range of one to another, you can continue your connection to the network. Okay. So that's the basic configuration, and it's very like what you would get for any other local area network. You have a certain range for the network, and then if you want, you can sort of exchange that range, extend that range. Again, because of the wireless nature, you can have mobility within this sort of a system. Now, in terms of the specification, 802.11 is part of the IEEE 802 family of LAN and MAN protocols. And basically what gets specified for any of this 802 family is a physical layer, a medium access layer, and then a link control built on top of that. Okay. And so it's the bottom two layers of the OSI stack, and again allows interaction with the whole TCP/IP stack. Okay. Now, again, the 802 family in general specifies all the, you know, the number of wired LANs, so Ethernet, etc. And this is just one specification within the family. Okay. So, again, what's specified is the physical layer, so how are you actually physically transmitting your bits, and in the case of 802.11, they actually specify a number of options, about half a dozen options in all, some of which are in current use, some of which aren't. Okay. And so these layers specify what frequency range you're operating in, what sort of multiplexing are you using? So orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, direct sequence spread spectrum, etc. Potentially the use of multiple antennas, so a MIMO system, so multiple input, multiple output. We'll discuss the ins and outs of that later, but just another sort of physical configuration. Then the medium access control layer is specified. Most typically, it allows for contention-based access, so like a wired Ethernet LAN or the sort of initial Ethernet LANs anyway. It also allows for a polling system. And we'll see towards the end, there's also some quality of service options have been specified as well. Okay. And finally, there's a common logic link control, the 802.3, it's 802.2 or 3. But that would sit on top of all of the LAN family in the 802 family. Okay. So, what we have is a single standard, but it's specifying a number of things. And so what exactly is being specified at any given time is indicated by amendments. And so amendments are indicated by a letter after the number. So ones you probably heard of 802.11n. So that's a specific flavor of physical access. 802.11g, A, B, also different flavors of physical access. Okay. There are 802.11i is a security-oriented specified security for 802.11. 802.11e specifies, again, quality of service. Okay. So, some of these standards are obviously sort of are non-compatible for instance, if you're specifying different physical layers, as in A, G, B, N, you know, they don't have anything to do with each other, really. Other standards can operate in conjunction with each other, so a quality of service standard or security standard operates in conjunction with the specification of the physical layer. Okay. In terms of how the letters are picked, it's done chronologically as the working group is established, which is different than from when the standard actually gets finished. Okay. So, well, there are four common, they're not the only ones, but there are four common MAC PHY standards, so specifying, again, the sort of basic operation of the network in terms of how bits are transmitted and then how frames get access to the network. And so these are B, G, A, and N. And they can be distinguished on a number of grounds. First of all, the frequency band in which they operate. Secondly, the technology, again, they use for the transmission of bits, for the modulation of bits. And this has an impact on the data rates possible, and also on the range of the system. Okay. So, I won't say anything about the modulation schemes used. Again, direct sequence spread spectrum is a spread spectrum technique. We'll discuss that later, sort of on its own. And again, OFDM is an orthogonal modulation technique. And again, we'll discuss that sort of later in terms. For now, we just, you know, again, all we're doing is realizing there are a number of options for 802.11. Okay. And again, there's a number of other amendments addressing various aspects of radio networking. And so E addresses quality of service, I addresses security, F allows access points to sort of organize and communicate with each other, S allows you to set up a mesh network. So again, the idea of a mesh network is you can try and get wider scale coverage. So you hook up a bunch of LANs together to get wider scale coverage. K deals with radio resource management. So again, if you're doing that, you have more issues about managing your resources. Okay. So, again, we're not going to say very much at all about the specific technologies that are used for transmission. The main thing that the place where we're going to spend the most time is on the medium access level. Again, that's sort of typically what's most interesting in local area network specifications. Okay. Now, before we start on the MAC, just a few words about, again, creating networks. So if you had a wired LAN, typically with, you know, the way you join it is you plug into a socket, and that's that. You've got your access. In a wireless system, it's a little more complex. Obviously, physically, your devices have to discover each other, so the access point and the station have to know of each other's existence. And then you also need some sort of authentication, so you're not going to let just anybody join your network. They have to be authorized to join your network. Okay. So, in terms of finding each other, access points will transmit beacon frames, and these are transmitted periodically at a low rate, but at high power, just for range and detection purposes. And they provide information that the the mobile station will need to connect to the network. So information about the synchronization, so physical level, the identity of the network, and addressing information. So how do you communicate with this network? The user station either has to have passive scanning, so it will be listening for the beacon frame from the access point, or it can also perform active scanning. It can transmit its own requests for an access point to respond to. Okay, and active scanning's faster because but can be intrusive. Okay. So again, their signaling has to occur just to let the two parties know that the other one exists. And so once, again, sort of physically you know they exist, you have to do a bit of handshaking then to join in the network. Okay, so you have to authenticate yourself. Okay. Now, in wired systems, it's generally assumed that most of the packets that are transmitted are correctly received. The radio environment is different in that it's noisy and there's interference, so the loss rate is, the loss rate and corruption rate is much higher. So 802.11 uses positive acknowledgments in the transmission of frames, in that it assumes that all frames are acknowledged. Okay, and then if you have an ARQ system, if the acknowledgement is not received in a timeout period, then the frame will be assumed to have been lost and be retransmitted. Okay. Okay, so again, the medium access control, how stations can share this radio medium is sort of one of the more interesting points. And 802.11 allows for three distinct modes, a distributed coordination function, and this is a contention-based medium access, and it uses an access method similar to what you would get in Ethernet. In Ethernet, you have the CSMA CD, carrier sends multiple access with collision detection. Here you'll have CSMA CA, carrier sense multiple access with collision avoidance. Okay, and again, the idea of this is that you listen, you attempt to ascertain that your medium is not in use, and that before you transmit, it's still possible for multiple stations to transmit at the same time. If that happens, then you back out some random amount. Okay. The second method is point control function. This is a contention-free mechanism, and here the access point controls medium access through a polling system. It asks the stations in turn whether they have data to send and allows them to send it. Now, this is not terribly widely implemented. And hybrid control function is just a sort of a combination of the two. So you have a contention period and a contention-free period. And this can be used as a sort of a basic quality of service mechanism. So if you have the traffic that requires quality of service, it's controlled in the transmits in the contention-free period. And the rest of the traffic contends for the medium. Mm-hmm. Okay. So again, the most wide, well, the DCF must, it's required that this must be implemented, and it's the most widely implemented of the access modes. So DCF, again, is a contention-based mechanism. So sorry. It's, again, very the mechanism used is very similar to CSMA-CD. So what you want to do is to minimize the number of collisions. So when a node wants to transmit, it senses the medium. If it doesn't sense something, it transmits. If not, it backs off and waits for some future time to transmit. If collision occurs, then the node will back off for a random time, sense the channel, and repeat the procedure. Okay. So this is again pretty much what would happen in a wired medium. There are a few problems in the wireless scenario in that the coverage for the nodes, the different nodes is different. So if you had, for instance, your a coax backbone cable, then anybody attached to that cable would hear everything that was going on. Now, with a wireless system, you can have people distributed over sort of different areas, and potentially they don't hear all of the communications. Okay. So here we have, in the example, we have three stations. And pretty much one can hear two, three can hear two, two can hear both one and three, But 1 and 3 cannot detect signals from each other. They're out of each other's range. Okay. And so when you're doing your sensing of a medium, say 3 is transmitting to 2, even if 1 listens, it won't hear that transmission, so it will assume the medium is free and can potentially start transmitting as well. Okay. And that's referred to as the hidden node problem. So nodes that want to transmit can't necessarily hear each other, and therefore you don't have full sensing of the medium. This, you know, like with cellular systems, this range can also be sort of used to one's advantage, in that you can actually have multiple transmissions going on that don't necessarily interfere with each other. Okay. So here, suppose node 1 is transmitting. It can even be talking to node 2. Suppose node 2 now wants to transmit to node 3. Well, node 2 is going to sense the medium is busy because of the transmission of node 1, and therefore won't transmit to node 3. But in actuality, no interference would have been caused because of the, you know, again, the range. Okay. So an additional sort of handshaking signaling protocol has been proposed to handle the hidden node, exposed node problem. Okay. And this consists of a transmission of 2 control messages, a request to send message, and a clear to send message. Okay. And so now if a station wants to transmit, it will send a request to send frame. And the receiver then will transmit a clear to send frame. And so depending on who hears the request to send and the clear to send, a station can make a better determination of whether to transmit or not. Okay. Okay, so specifically for the hidden node problem, again, the idea is that 1 is going to establish a connection with, or is going to be transmitting to node 2. And 3, if it just starts transmitting, 3 can't hear that. So what 1 does is it transmits a request to send message, 3, or frame, control message. Node 3 doesn't hear that. Okay. But 2 will then transmit a clear to send signal. 1 hears that, 3 also hears that. Now 3 realizes that since it has heard the clear descend signal, if it starts transmitting, it will be interfering with a transmission. Okay. Part of the clear to send packet is a specification of how long the transmission will take, so 3 knows how long it will have to remain quiet. Okay. So, using this again, the stations can track not only sort of the initial communication, but they know the duration of that communication. That duration information is kept in the in what's called a network allocation vector, and so that network allocation vector again tracks how long the channel will be busy. Okay, so if you hear you're clear to send, then well, if you hear either the request to send or the clear to send, you have an indication of how long the channel will be busy for. Okay. When that period, so if you're a station, when that period of time expires, then you go back into a listening mode, followed by if you need to if you wish to transmit, you start your own transmission. Okay. So, again, you have sort of a busy period followed by a waiting period, and the waiting period, you're again in listening mode. That's how long that is governed by what's called an interframe spacing, so IFS. And your DIFS is your basic amount of idle time. Now, what we can do with the interframe spacings is impose a sort of priority on different types of packets by increasing or decreasing the spacing. So essentially, the shorter your interframe spacing is, the shorter your listening time, the quicker you will be to transmit. Therefore, you have an advantage over over traffic that's got a longer interframe spacing time. Okay. So 4 different spacing times are defined. Short IFS, so again, this would give you the highest priority, and this is used for control messages such as request to send, clear to send, acknowledgments. Okay, so those will get through before other messages. Then your DIFS, and so DCF IFS is the standard time that a station will wait to try to transmit data. The PIFS is used within the point control function when trying to arrange that. And then the EIFS, the extended IFS, can you be set to variable values when there's been an error in transmission, so to try and sort of alleviate congestion. Okay. So again, sort of summarizing all of that, you wait for a frame to transmit, then you sense whether the medium is idle. If not, you wait for the current transmission to end, then you wait an IFS, check for whether the medium is idle. If it is, you go into a back off. If not, you continue to wait. Okay, so this allows you to not all be transmitting at once after a transmission. If the medium is idle initially, you wait your IFS, and if it's still idle, you transmit. Okay. So back off in DFS again is used so that not every, after a transmission, not everybody immediately tries to transmit. So after a frame transition, a node is going to wait the DIFS plus a contention window time, and the exact value of that will be chosen randomly from a contention window set, which starts at some minimum value, and then sort of as you go through sensing the collisions, that the window increases. Okay. And so either the frame is successfully transmitted, or you have if it's not transmitted within a number of tries, then you essentially give up and start again. Okay. So, the frame format we'll just go quickly through frame format for the Mac layer. And again, it's similar to what you would have seen for any of the other 802 protocols, in particular Ethernet. There's sort of additional control information required, having to do with sort of radio issues, so power control, security, etc. And also there are four address fields. So you have the addresses of sort of the stations, the sender and the receiver, but also the associated access point addresses as well. Okay. So, again, where the main complication comes in, sort of distinct from other LAN types, is in the frame control. So there's more information sent here. You have a protocol version. You indicate the type of frame. Yeah, that's fairly standard. The subtype of frame. Whether we're going to or from a distribution system, so from one of these sort of more complicated network setups. An indication whether the frame has been fragmented. Is this a retransmission? Power management. which indicates that the sending station may be changing its power level, going into a sleep mode. More data informs a sleeping station that it needs to wake up and have data, the data is available for it, security, etc. Okay. Now, as we discussed before, in terms of the MAC access, we want to give people an indication of how long transmissions are going to take. So the duration field is used to send that information. So it's sets the nav value. Okay. It can also be used within polling to indicate sort of how much data there is to transmit or receive. Okay, again, we have four addresses, so source and destination, and also sort of intermediate nodes. So again, if it, sort of access points or any device which will forward your data through the network, the sort of virtual extended services set. Okay, and finally, we have a data field. And so the maximum supportable data is 2,312 bytes, but there are other recommendations that would restrict that to lower values. And finally, sequence control and frame checking are used for error correction. Again, in the similar way they would be for Ethernet. Okay, so what control frames do we have? Well, you have your request to send, your clear to send, your acknowledgments. Then you have sort of the management of the various periods in the system. So you, if the PCF has to indicate when the contention-free period is going to end, and then that can be acknowledged. Okay. So there's a number of data frames, and the first group of core is essentially sending data, but potentially with various control information piggybacked onto that. So you can, again, this control information can be sent as its own frame, or as the control information can be sent out or with data attached. And again, you can use the data frames without data to transmit control information. Okay. Management frames are used to arrange the network, so manage the communication between stations and access points, and manage extended services sets. So they would be used to request to join a network or rejoin a network as you move from one access point to another. Allow beacon frames will allow you to, again, indicate where the networks are, and you can have traffic information, you can exit the network and authentication, so again, when joining the network. Okay, so in general, what this leads to is a relatively complex system. And again, we need to view the system within the context of a complete network, an IP network. So in general, certain data rates are promised on the connection, but your end user is only going to see a certain proportion of that. And again, the reason for that is, again, in the structure of IP networks, and specifically, you have this layered architecture, and each layer has a separate function, and the performance of those different functions are going to impact on sort of the performance of the system overall. So again, with the MAC, you've got contention periods. Within IP, you have routing. TCP, controls overall how an application can send data through a network, etc. So when looking at what the end user sees, they're not just seeing what is provided by the network itself, but they're seeing sort of the impact that going through all of the steps of networking have on the system. Okay. So again, like most LANs, one of the sort of most complex parts of it is the MAC, but all other issues have to be accounted for as well. Security, again, is very important in wireless networks in general. So again, 802.11 specifies security. And the initial attempt was what's called the wired equivalency protocol. And this encrypted the data elements of the transmission. It went through an encryption-decryption cycle. But this proved not to be terribly secure. It's been superseded by the Wireless Protected Access Protocol, and this is developed as part of the 802.11i standard. Okay. So again, you could spend days, a whole module. Some of you will spend a whole module talking about security. But just, again, be aware that you need sort of additional security when dealing with a wireless environment. Okay. So that's sort of the MAC layer. Returning at least briefly to the physical layer. Again, what we noted earlier was that there's a number of different options for the physical layers. So it's typically divided into sublayers, a physical convergence physical layer convergence procedure, and so that's just sort of it's an interface between the MAC and the actual physical and the actual sort of physical transmission of the bits, just makes everything look uniform from the MAC on up. And then the physical medium dependent layer, which is responsible for transmitting each of the bits and is going to be different for each physical layer specified. Okay. So, typically, within 802.11, the channels used are 20 megahertz with a 1 megahertz guard band, and a number of these are specified in overlapping patterns. Okay, and so if you're sort of co-located, then there's only 3 possible non-overlapping channels. Okay. Now, again, a huge number of different physical layers have been defined based on different technologies. Okay. So we're going to say a few, again, we're not going to say a whole pile about them. We'll say a few words regarding the 802.11n specification. Okay. Now, 802.11n is the most recent of the physical specifications, and the goal of the 802.11n was to increase the data rates over what was available in previous specifications. And the way we see that they use is similar techniques to what we'll see later on in sort of other areas as well. So one possibility that they use is that they increase the channel bandwidth so transmission can occupy 2 channels at the same time. It also uses MIMO technology, so multiple antennas can be used simultaneously, and this can be either used to increase the data rate or to sort of help with the signal quality. Okay. And so again, it either allows spatial multiplexing, so it's for transmitting of multiple streams, or space-time block coding, so transmitting more coding information to improve the quality of the signal. Okay. And so additionally, beamforming can be used to direct the signal and optimize the received power. Now, we'll talk a little bit more about MIMO later, but again, the idea is, again, to use multiple antennas to improve your signal, either rate or quality. Okay. Now, 802.11n defines a number of modulation and coding schemes, which all of which affect the data rates and also sort of the quality of the signal. And so these can be chosen depending on sort of the quality of your channel. Okay. So again, you have a number of modulation schemes. You have different coding rates available, and so the coding rates are usually specified as K, N, where for every K bits of data, N bits are transmitted. And so then you have garbage, you have different channel bandwidths and different numbers of spatial streams, so did utilizing MIMO. Okay. So overall, 802.11n allows 78 different permutations of those factors. And so the first 32 fix the modulation type and coding schemes, and the rest allow for, again, different spatial streams. Okay. Now, it's required that access points support the first 15 and stations support the first 7. Okay. So, again, this is sort of future-looking in the sense that, you know, they've defined all of these, and if they become necessary or useful, then they can be sort of slotted into the standard. Okay. So that's just a little slice of these. And what you see, again, is that different modulation schemes are used, different coding rates, and different channel rates, channel bandwidths. Okay, and what this does is, again, have an impact on what's the overall data rate that you can achieve. Okay. So, again, what we see here is, well, there's two things. There's the flexibility, the idea that it's sort of desirable to be able to do different things at different times based on channel conditions, and also sort of, again, the forward-looking idea of trying to encompass what might possibly be implemented within the system. Now, our final topic within 802.11 is quality of service. And so, you know, one way to provide it, again, is to use PCF, but it's not proved to be terribly popular. So an alternative is to try and build something into the PCF. Okay. 802.11e the 802.11e specification deals with how you can possibly provide quality of service in a contention-based medium. And it defines, again, the hybrid control function, so alternating the idea of alternating between PCF and DCF, and also EDCA, which again allows for some sort of quality of service within a contention-based DCF type mechanism. Okay, so HCF allows for contention-free periods, and it allows it to be this to be controlled by the access points. And then since the access point then has the control, it can define it can provide service to traffic streams, so individual traffic streams, based on some sort of traffic class definition. Okay, so again, that would rely on PCF being implemented. The alternative is EDCA, Enhanced Distributed Channel Access. And here, the goal is to differentiate the medium access for different traffic classes and give higher priority to different classes such as voice or video, classes that would need sort of a higher quality of service relative to sort of best effort traffic. Okay. And so the way this is accomplished is to define your traffic into a number of classes, so two best effort classes, a voice class and a video class, and then allow those classes to contend for the medium in a different fashion. In particular, your interframe spacing is going to change for the classes. Your contention window will change for the classes. Okay, so as we've seen before, the interframe spacing can provide priority, and you can provide priority for within contention windows as well. The larger the windows, or the on average, the longer you're going to wait to transmit. Okay, so for each of the traffic classes, you define the contention window, and again, the smaller the contention window, the higher the priority. You define the interframe spacing. Again, the higher the interframe, or the smaller the interframe spacing, the higher the priority. And the final change is what's called a transmission opportunity. And so instead of using this to send a single frame, you define a time period over which the station can send as many frames as possible. Okay, and so an example of this, okay, so we have again, our two best effort traffics, one background, one slightly more important, and then you have video and voice traffic. Okay. And so what we see is that the best effort traffic gets the highest contention windows, and the highest maximum contention windows, and the longest IFSs. And for these, there's also no maximum transmission opportunity, so in these cases, they would be transmitting a single frame at a time. Okay, voice and video then, there's some attempt to prioritize them, and so voice gets the smallest contention window since it needs the most frequency, and it gets equal IFS, an equal interframe spacing with video, And then, so it's going to get slight priority over video. But then, just due to the characteristics, it gets a smaller transmission opportunity. You'd have more data to send with video, so it gets a larger transmission opportunity. Okay, so, again, 802.11 is interesting because it's, again, one of the, it's the main example of wireless networking outside of the cellular system. It is intended to slot into the internet world, so it's part of the 802 standard, local area network standards, where the main goal is not just to connect up a few machines, but also then to forward that on to the net, to the wider internet in general. All of the 802 standards define the physical and data link layers, and so as with a lot of the LANs, the MAC is contention based, and so we saw how this varied from what we would have typically seen for the wired contention. In terms of the physical descriptions, again, there's numerous different flavors. I focused a little, we'll see sort of various aspects of these later in the module. I don't want to get into them now, but I focused a little bit on 802.11n, again, just because it's using some of the same techniques as we're seeing emerge in the cellular world, in WiMAX standards, the LTE standards. Okay. And so finally, sort of, again, one of the emerging areas of concern within all of these different networks is quality of service. Sort of what you do in best efforts, not enough. And we see that, some thought has gone into that with the 802.11 standard. Okay. So, that's the end of that. When we return, I'm going to try and blast through the Bluetooth discussion. Again, it's interesting just again because it's quite common, and again it gives you another point of comparison besides sort of there's the internet, there's the telephony world, and then here's a sort of a third view of the world. So we'll take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll see how far we can get with the Bluetooth.